You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 2 November. Transnet's lifted all force majeure. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Wayne McCary, we got Sasol convertible bonds, we got Capco updates, and of course, the Fed this evening. Octodec, we're talking results with them in a set of housing. It's definitely, it's picking up nicely. Good set of numbers, deep discount to net asset value. Sean Kelly from Isar Wealth talking around timing the market. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Sasol to offer $14 billion in dollar bonds and targeting a lower interest rate than existing debt, which is not bad considering increase in rates worldwide, but it's their convertible. We'll dig into that with Wayne. Business Day, public sector wage strike looms after talks have collapsed. Nearly 800,000 state workers preparing to down tools. Strike certificate has been issued. Morning markets, US was red, S&P off 0.4, Nasdaq off 1%. Asia is green with Sydney up 1.7%. Tokyo, a couple of points to the green, 0.03%. Commodities, very green overnight. Gold, 1,654. Brent, 95.97 a barrel. Platinum, 960. Palladium, 1,898. Rand trading at 18.10. Bitcoin unchanged, 20,500. Tencent down, up now, 0.7%. And top 40 opening call, 275 points to the green. That's a little under 0.5%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCary, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned the Sasol convertible bond in the intro there. The market didn't like it. I saw some commentators saying this is almost a backdoor rights issue because in essence, when the bond matures in 5 years, instead of paying back the $750 million, they're going to issue new shares. Your thoughts?
Essentially, that's correct, yes. Of course, it depends on what the share price is. I mean, if the oil price is low, oil price is low, there's no conversion. So if you buy these bonds, you get an interest rate lower than what you would normally charge Sasol, on their risk profile, etc. But then you get the potential upside of buying the shares cheaper. But, of course, there's no guarantee that the shares will be cheaper. But it is, in effect, a backdoor rights issue because, you know, if the share price does perform, and I think the strike's about 30% higher, somewhere around there, I think, from the current price. So if the share price does perform, you don't have to pay back the loan, number one. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you're paying a lower interest rate than what you would under normal market conditions. But, you know, you are issuing more shares, so it is dilution.
Yeah. And that's what the market
was. And that's why the market is up.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Because, I mean, as you say, it's a good rate. I mean, they're getting a nice rate. Nothing wrong with that. Capco, we've talked around them before. I mean, obviously, they've had a tough time since Brexit. But their trading update yesterday, I mean, you've made this point many times. Covent Garden is probably one of the best property assets in the entire United Kingdom, never mind just London.
Yeah, very much so. I've always liked the company, and I especially like the company since the share price has fallen.
Yeah, I mean, trading, 22.89 yesterday, massively cheap there. NASPAS and Process both had a storming day yesterday on rumors that Tencent was going to be sold in its entirety. Rumor was denied, but the stocks didn't come back. I mean, they seemed quite happy.
No.
8% higher on the day.
Yeah, but look, I mean, what has happened, as we all know, is the share price have been absolutely hammered, and then they announced the share buybacks, and the price recovered strongly, and it essentially gave all of that back, just even with the share buyback, and now this rumor that they could possibly do that. So we'll have to see, but I mean, it's amazing how things change. You know, a couple of years ago, everyone was shouting at them for selling part of Tencent to fund their other businesses. Now people might be saying, well, please sell Tencent because we can use the money somewhere else, or you can pay it back to us. So it's amazing how things change over time.
Yeah, I take that point. That's the market for you. What does Buffett say? It's a manic depressive. Yes. Some days it's deeply excited. The big thing today, of course, Federal Reserve having their FOMC meeting this evening. My sense is it's pretty much baked in. We're going to get a 0.75%.
Correct, yes. But what they say will be very important after that, because inflation is going to fall rapidly in the first half of next year, because that's when you add the year-on-year peaks. Mm-hmm. So somewhere between January, February, and June, July, inflation is going to fall, I mean, materially. And they must be anticipating this. They know this because this is, I mean, it's freely available information.
Sure.
So I think they might say, listen, the next time it might not be 7.5, it might be a half. It's still going up, but 0.75 might not be necessary. So we'll have to look at the commentary when it comes out. That's the most important.
Yeah, so the rate announcement 8 o'clock tonight, our time, conference at 8.30, and I take your point, it's going to be what they say that's going to really, really be important. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment, appreciate the early morning. And that's our question on our LinkedIn and Twitter. What do you think rates are going to be tonight? Everyone is saying 0.75%. Do you concur with that? Maybe you think we'll get only 0.5%. I think it was Morgan Stanley said, if we only get 0.5%, the S&P will rally 10%. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sean Kelly. He's a director at Azure Wealth. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. Timing the market. You made a really great point in a note you sent. The best and worst days of the stock market tend to cluster. So you might be sitting there watching an absolute collapse in the market and thinking you're really, really smart because perhaps you weren't in the market. But that probably means there's a really good day just around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a pleasure to be on with you, Simon. But yeah, that's 100% correct. So, I mean, if you look at the best and worst trading days across the stock market, typically you find that the returns are clustered. So take the S&P 500, for example. The vast majority, roughly 60 to 80% of that, of the best and worst days occur after the market has already started declining and is in a period of current volatility. And the simple reason for this is that markets are more volatile when they are declining.
Yeah.
And volatile events and days tend to cluster. So, I mean, a good example is looking at the S&P 500 in 2020. You know, after a 20% decline, 1 month afterwards, it was up 12.5%. And if you fast forward that to a year, after a 20% decline, it was up 59%. And this pattern tends to repeat itself. So looking again at the S&P 500 this year, in June, it was down 8.4%. July, it was up almost 9%. September, it was down 9.5%. October, again, almost up 9%. So the fact is, generally, equity markets' largest daily gains tend to occur in clusters during the worst times for investors.
And I appreciate it. I mean, it's not there is no fun to watching your portfolio go weaker, particularly as you say with that volatility. Bear markets tend to be a lot more speedy on the downside than the bulls are on the upside. But it really comes back to that sense of discipline. And as you point out, if you're trying to avoid the bad days, truthfully, you're going to miss the good days. And as investors, we need to, I mean, almost just close our eyes and hold tight.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is important for one to remain invested, to capture the best days in the market, as missing the best days can be detrimental to the long-term growth of your portfolio and investment strategy. So, I mean, to give you context, if you take the S&P 500 over a 20-year period from, call it 2002 to the end of 2021, it would have given an investor an average dollar return of 9.5%.
Mm-hmm.
However, if that investor had just missed 5 of the best trading days during that 20-year period, they would have had an annualized return of 7%.
Whoa.
Now, if you extend that out to missing 10 of the best trading days, they would have had an annualized return of 5.3%, 20 days, 50.62%, and being out the market for 40 days of during that 20-year period, 40 of the highest trading days, they'd actually be down 1.5%. So it's a very hard argument for anyone to claim that they can time the market to capture the best 5, 10, 20, or whatever number of days of the 20-year period. And I think it's a, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy that Peter Lynch said far more money has been lost by investors preparing for market correction or trying to anticipate correction rather than there's been more lost, you know, in that than the corrections themselves.
And that's a great point. And I remember, and we're going right, we're way back to the previous crisis, the 2008. I had a friend who about probably 2004 or so started talking about this property bubble, started getting worried and went into cash. And he was right 3 years later. But even that collapse that then happened, of course, it never actually went back to the levels where he had sold, and he was markedly worse off. So, I mean, his logic was right. And that's one thing. We can look at an environment, at an economy, at a market, and we can make decisions that might be in time proven correct, but that doesn't mean we're necessarily going to make a profit from it, because you point out you miss 40 days, you've actually got a negative return.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's maybe where, you know, cost dollar averaging and yeah, long-term investing comes into play. You know, the investment strategy of cost dollar averaging aims to minimize the impact of market volatility. It takes out the need to time the market, because essentially, what you're doing is buying into the market in regular intervals over a period mm-hmm. of time, which should give you an average cost in your market entry points. And as an investment house, we implement this strategy because successful market timing requires two incredibly difficult decisions. One, when to buy, and two, when to sell.
Yeah.
And I think many people overlook that. What many people overlook is that markets are a second order system. You know, what I mean by this is that to successfully implement market timing strategies, you not only have to be able to predict events such as interest rate movements, wars, commodity price shocks, pandemics, the outcome of elections, and the list goes on, but you also need to know what the market was expecting, how it will react, and getting your timing of all of this has to be perfect. Now, as we know, this proves to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. So by following a dollar cost averaging strategy, your entry points become less relevant over the long term.
Yeah.
And that dovetailed with quality underlying investment exposures can be an extremely powerful technique to generate high portfolio returns. So, I mean, you know, within our own fund, if you look at some of the quality holdings we allocate to, like Microsoft, Amazon, mm-hmm. Unilever, mm-hmm. PayPal, Visa, although they are facing headwinds, they still have the ability to generate high cash flows and, importantly, high return on capital employed regardless of the entry point. As you know, Simon, the fact is buying into these quality companies whilst markets are low can be a huge benefit over the long term.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, markets are on sale. And in 5, 10, 20 years, we're going to have forgotten about the worries of 2022, and we're going to have made solid returns if we just, as you say, just sort of just average in, just buy every time, and particularly when markets are perhaps weaker. Sean Kelly, Isa Wealth, appreciate the early morning insight.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Jeffrey Rapnick, MD of Octodec. Results to year-end August. Profit at $605.1 million. That's up from $174.8 last year. Full-year dividend around 30 versus 50 cents. LTV, loan-to-value, down at 39.7. That's down from 43.2%. And NAV at R23.28. That's important because have a look at where the share price is relevant, relative. Jeffrey, appreciate the early morning time. Residential vacancies down at 7%, down from 15.9. Normality is starting to return, particularly in your residential.
Yeah, morning, Simon. That's exactly right. Residential was a star performer. People are coming back to work, I guess. It's a reverse what happened previously. People coming in from the rural areas, coming into the urban areas. Mm-hmm. We had COVID, and people left, went, returned to the urban, the rural areas. And now that things are normalizing, it's back to the urban areas.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, students back. I mean, I was driving.
That's
through.
The other big one, yes.
Yeah,
students back, no longer online learning.
Yeah, I mean, my wife said Vits there, and suddenly campuses are full again. You still had some COVID-19 rental discounts. You also had some bad debts. I'm imagining that's almost, I mean, this is for the full year. I imagine those probably were the beginning part of the year more than the end part of your financial year.
Yes, that's true. I think it's important to realize that this financial year, although the results were good, it still contained some tough COVID times. So looking forward to a year without these kind of abnormalities.
That's a good point, because of course your year started 1 September last year when we were still in lockdown. We didn't yet know what Omicron was, and for example, students were still 100% remote. So staying with residential a moment, have you been able to get through rental increases, or are you still getting reversions?
No. So that's been the problem, or perhaps looking forward, that's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a conservative team, I guess, and they've been reluctant to push the increases. Reason being, they wanted to get the occupancies up, which they've done now.
Mm-hmm.
The next step will be to slowly start increasing. In Johannesburg, pleasing to note that I believe our competitors who dumped, we'll use the word dump, but they loaded 2,500 units into the market, and that hurt us. Those are all gone. The take-up is good there. So the market's is equilibrium.
The point of stress, and this is not just a stress for you, this is the entire sector, office vacancies remains the stress point. For you, it's not massive, but you have some office, and it remains the big challenge.
Yes, but it must be pointed out, and I always like to point out, that our office is not a typical office that you would,
yes,
say, typically find in Sandton. Our CBD offices, roughly 50% rented out to government, who in the main have behaved themselves.
Okay.
They've paid the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half is not a corporate who potentially, well, I think the problem with offices, what will back to work look like? Are people going to come back to work? Mm-hmm. Still that same demand for offices. As well as an overbuild, in my humble opinion, an overbuild of offices. So we're not subject to those forces. These are in the main, these are people, entrepreneurs, I guess, and
okay,
they run different things to what you'd expect in a normal office. Tailors, dressmakers.
Gotcha. Okay. I hear what you say. It's office, but it's not that traditional office. Retail, and a lot of your retail, again, is in the CBD. This will be a building where there might be offices or accommodation in the top of the building, and then it's retail at ground level. You say that you're still not quite seeing footfall back at pre-pandemic.
No, I think it's hard to tell, but it's back. The big one that's back in the Johannesburg CBD is cross-border trade, which accounts for huge turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
I think those guys are back. I'm seeing those buses travelling around.
Okay.
But in the prime retail, the big guys are hunting, and if the big guys are hunting, they've done their homework. It's a good indicator that things are good again.
Yeah, because you do. I mean, you do have some sort of what do we call them? National brand tenants, I suppose, would be the phrase.
Oh yes. We've just opened up a shop by Checkered. We'll be opening up at the beginning of December.
Mm-hmm.
A totally revamped 4,000 square metre shop, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way those guys would agree to something like this unless they were really confident of doing big turnovers.
We'll leave that there. Up top, I said NAV was 23.28. I couldn't find the share price. Closed in 9.89 yesterday. Massive discount and, frankly, massive yield. 1.50. You're getting almost a 15% yield on that. Jeffrey Wapnick, MD, Octodeck. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Jimmy Moyoha on the AdCorp result. They paid an interim dividend for the first time since 2018. I mean, they were, it's all relative, but they were, you know, it was also the first time that they actually picked up revenues for the first time since 2018. We asked if it was a stock on your radar. Two-thirds of you, almost, no, actually 60% of you said no. It's been a horror. Thanks, but no thanks. A third said you were kind of watching and waiting, but not very committed. A very small number was holding AdCorp. It has been a tough share to hold. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We've got Dis-Chem results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.